To reading from Bhajan Rahasyam, we're continuing to get a deeper understanding of the definition of Bhava Bhakti. And there's three symptoms of Bhava Bhakti, these three types of taste, ruchibis, become very deep at this level of Bhav. And one is Bhagavat Prapti, Abhilash, Anukalyena Abhilash, and Sohara Abhilash. So we're discussing this intense desire and hankering to attain Bhagavan, Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So when we hear about Krishna, then we develop the desire to attain Krishna. So in his meditation on this principle, on this Bhava Bhakti and these characteristics of Bhava Bhakti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has revealed four verses, 18, 19, 20, and 21, from Bhajan Rahasyam, which illuminate this principle of Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, the intense desire, Prapti, to attain or to acquire Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So hearing about his beauty, we heard so much about his beauty yesterday, how the gopis were cursing Brahma, were giving them eyelids which blink, and the gopis were even saying that when we die, we pray that we become Brahma in the next life. Because when we act as Brahma, when we become the creators, we're not going to make the same mistake that he did. Because when we create Brajagopis, we'll make sure that those Brajagopis don't have any eyelids. So they will be able to see Krishna unobstructedly, continuously, without any intermission, without any interval. Of course, it's kind of humorous because the gopis aren't going to take another birth. But text 19 again continues to describe the beauty of Krishna. As by hearing about the beauty of Krishna, there's something that's very... If you hear about something wonderful, the natural response or reaction to that hearing is that you want that. If someone says, well, there's an island in the Pacific Ocean which is very beautiful, so many waterfalls, and so many beautiful tasty fruits, and there's so many cultural activities, and so much music, and very wonderful people. And you hear descriptions of a very idyllic setting or island somewhere in the world. Naturally, by hearing about the different features and characteristics and activities that go on in that place, we'll be curious. We'll be curious to go there, to experience that new realm, to take part in that, to attain that happiness or fulfillment. Someone may go so far to say, yes, I went there, I spent my vacation there, I spent 1 month on that island, Hawaii, and I felt happier than I ever felt anywhere in the world. And any time, I had the best time of my life, and I'm just waiting for the time when I can go back there. And it's such a beautiful place, such wonderful, beautiful people, such a healthy, happy environment. It's like heaven on earth. So when someone tells us all these things, naturally you'll think, oh, where is this place? I want to go there. By hearing and acquiring knowledge about a particular place, then naturally one develops a desire. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, somehow he has decided to, or he's been inspired to present these four verses to describe the beauty of Krishna, which upon hearing, and this is called Bhajan Rahasyam. Bhajan means where this is a sadhana bhajan, that over and over again we will read these same verses, because these are very, very powerful verses to create attraction. These verses actually help create attraction to Krishna. They portray a very clear and concise and attractive description of Krishna's beauty to our eyes and heart. So the sadhaka, who is ajata rati sadhaka, he has not yet awakened his rati. Rati means bhav. He has not come to the level of bhava bhakti. He will read these verses over and over again, and he'll think, yes, actually, these verses are describing the beauty of Krishna, the attractiveness of Krishna. Just by contacting these verses, by reading these verses, by submitting to these verses, I feel myself becoming attracted to Krishna. I feel some Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, some intense desire also growing in me to attain this beautiful form of Krishna, to attain the service of this beautiful sweet Lord. This is the whole idea of why these verses are included here. These verses are not meant for cursory reading. They're meant for repeated meditation. These are, you say, steps of meditation. These are practices. These are activities to be done over and over. This is text 19, describing Krishna as the epitome of beauty. The Creator fashioned Sri Krishna in an unprecedented way, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is 3rd canto, chapter 2, verse 13. Yadaramasu norabhatarajasuye nirikshidrik swas yayanam chiloka karsyena chadyeha gatam vidatur harvakshutrita koshalamityamantyata. When the people from all the three worlds were present at Dharmaraj Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Yajna, when they saw the form of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, which is so pleasing to the eye, they thought that when the Creator had fashioned this form, He had reached the zenith of His expertise in creating human forms. Yudhisthira Rajasuya Nayana Mangal Krishna Rupa Loka Traya Nivasi Sakal Jagatera Shisti Madhya Ati Chamatkar Vidatara Koshale Karila Niradhar. That's the Bengali version. Nayana Mangal. There's some commentary. Uddhav was overwhelmed with Krishna Prem. And this verse that we mentioned, he's actually describing Krishna's form to Vidura. Those who personally saw Sri Krishna at Yudhisthira's Suya Yajna praised Brahma's skill in creating by saying, even Brahma after became wonderstruck upon seeing the splendor of Krishna's graceful body, which eclipses the luster of a blue lotus or sapphire. So in this text, Uddhava is praising the creative skill, but Krishna's form is eternal without a beginning. Nevertheless, for the sake of perspective, the words like creation have been used. Sri Krishna's form is perfect, eternal, human-like, and beginningless. Krishna's form is manifest in Vrindavan and is suitable for human-like pastimes, Naralila. Among all the pastimes performed by Krishna in His different sarups, in His various abodes, such as Vaikuntha, His Naralila means human-like lila, which Krishna performs in Braj, is topmost. Krishna is glorified in three ways according to the degrees to which His qualities are manifest. Purna, complete; Purnatara, more complete; Purnata, most complete. Krishna's form, in which all of His qualities, such as beauty, sweetness, opulence, and opulence are manifest, is the most complete way. It's called Purnatam. And this form is manifest in Vrindavan. So obviously, Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna in Ayodhya as Ram, Krishna in Vaikuntha as Narayan, Krishna in Dwarka as Dwarkanath, Krishna in Mathura as Mathuranath. All these transcendental forms of the Lord are certainly beautiful, no doubt. Ram was very beautiful. So many ladies and fell in love with Ram, and even sages, Dandakaranya sages, they fell in love with Ram when they saw him in Dandakaranya forest. He's so attractive, so beautiful. By seeing him, they developed conjugal feelings, and they expressed the feelings mentally by some sankalpa, some desire. And so, Ram, understanding their heart, he blessed them that they would become gopis in the future, and Dwapara Yuga. And they did, they became gopis to enjoy or offer themselves for the conjugal pleasure of Krishna. They became the sadhana siddha gopis, rishicharis, and they worship God as Katyayani, and then they attain Krishna as their husband. So these forms are all beautiful. But the form of Krishna is the most beautiful, the most sweet, and the most opulent is displayed here. Flies have so much attraction. I wish I had so much attraction to Krishna's holy name that I could never give it up. I just keep coming back. So therefore Krishna, because his form is most beautiful, and because his form is the most sweet of all the forms of Godhead, and his form displays the most opulence, because not only does he have material, ordinary opulence, money, palaces, all these things, and all the silk and gold, he also has the opulence of renunciation. Narayan has so much opulence, but he doesn't give up the goddess of fortune. And Ram has so much opulence, but he doesn't give up Sita, at least willfully. But Krishna has so much opulence, he is the most opulent, because even when he's with 16,000 or 3 million gopis, who are the goddesses of fortune, every single gopi is as beautiful as millions of Sitas and millions of Lakshmis. He just walks away from them in the Rasa dance. So this is the epitome of opulence, to be so attached, to be surrounded. What greater opulence is there than such supreme renunciation? And the other form of opulence is that Krishna, he's completely satisfied with these simple offerings of the Vrindavan forest, the gunja berry necklaces, the peacock feathers of the peacock bird, feathers of the parrot, and the chalk and manganese and sulfur and mineral powders of Govardhan Hill, and the simple ornaments and leaves and wildflowers of the forest, the Vaijayanti garlands. He's very happy with these things and considers these are natural opulences. And he rather likes to wear these things, although he has pearl necklaces and diamond necklaces and emeralds and sapphires. But he prefers these things, and he accepts them with great relish. So this is his opulence is much greater. And the opulence of Vrindavan is much greater than Vaikuntha. Every inch of Vrindavan is Chintamani gem. But in Vaikuntha, you'll never find Lord Narayan wearing a peacock feather or wearing a gunjamala or some simple lowly flower from the forest. He can't have this opulence. His opulence is somewhat circumscribed. But Krishna's opulence is from the lowest thing to the highest thing. Krishna adorns his body with all of these objects, and by contacting Krishna they exhibit their true opulent form by being engaged in his service. So Krishna appears in his most complete form of Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, only in Vrindavan, because it is here in Vrindavan that Krishna's associates express the ultimate limit of prema. In all other places, Krishna manifests either as Purna or Purnatara, according to the level to which prema is developed in his associates of that abode. In other words, Krishna's form, it depends on his devotees. If his devotees are high class, then Krishna exhibits a high-class form. If the devotee's love is somewhat mixed or diluted with other feelings, maybe some feelings on their own side, then Krishna shows a more diluted or subdued form of his total personality. So the love of Sita or the queens of Dwarka, or what to speak of the devis of Vaikuntha, goddesses of fortune, is not the depth of the gopi's love of Braj. It's not the extent of madness, the extent of dedication, the extent of surrender, self-surrender. The gopi's surrender is so deep and so all-encompassing and so unlimited that it takes the shape of being self-forgetful. They forget all about themselves and their intense desire, their intense, called Kamanuga Bhakti, their unlimitedly intense desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna. It's called Kamanuga. It's called Kamatmika Bhakti. And that bhakti which follows in the wake of that is called Kamanuga. And that's for the sadhakas that follow the footsteps of the Braja Gopis. So therefore in Vrindavan, because the love of the devotees is so great, then Krishna shows the greatest form. The greater the love, the greater form Krishna reveals to reciprocate and accept that love. Because that love is so great that no other form of Godhead could contain it. If Ram appeared before the gopis, Ram would dissolve, he would melt, he would disappear in the presence of the gopis' love. It's too great. His form couldn't contain it, he couldn't hold it. If Narayan, what to speak of Narayan, Narayan would just shrivel up and fall to pieces. If he came in front of the, came face to face with the intensity of the gopis' love and their dedication, because he's never experienced something like that from the Lakshmis of Vaikuntha. So therefore the gopis' love is so great, and the Vrishvasis in general, their love is so intense and so great, that only the form of Krishna can carry that love and receive that love and reciprocate with that love. So therefore the devotees of the greatest caliber, exhibiting the greatest intensity of dedication, self-forgetfulness and pure love, loving dedication and service. So then Krishna shows, Bhagavan shows the greatest topmost form of himself, which is Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. Vrindavan Sri Krishna. In Braj, Krishna manifests himself in a form called Purnatam. In three of the bhavas in which he has relationships with the Brijvasis, Dasyabhav, Sakyabhav, and Matsalya, there is an expectation of only one kind of relationship. For instance, in Dasya, only servitude is expected. Also, there is some etiquette, maryada, in that Dasya, in that service rendered to Krishna by devotees in these three rasas. So in Dasya, Sakya, and Vatsalya, motherhood, friendship, and servitorship, there is a little bit of etiquette, a little bit, there's some, the devotees, even in Braj, they follow some rules and regulations to some extent. But when we come to Madhurya Ras, or Shingha Ras, or Vishuddha Prem, Nirmal Prem, of the gopis, Braja gopis, Madhurya Prem, that they have with Sri Krishna, that of lover and beloved, it's called Kanta Kanta, their service follows solely in the wake of their desire for him. They do not hesitate to transgress chastity and dignity for the sake of serving Krishna and giving him happiness. Therefore, Kanta Prem, which is the love of his lovers, is supreme. And Sri Radha is the crown jewel of all these Kantas. Because Radha's love entirely controls Sri Krishna. By the influence of Sri Radha's prem, the Purnatam beauty and sweetness of Sri Krishna increases without cessation. That's why we have that verse. Pranam verse, Sri Krishna Pranam. We say, Hey Krishna, Krishna Sindhu, Dinabandha Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta, Namostute. So all the gopis are kantas. The Gopika Kanta, they're all lovers. They're all the intimate, confidential lovers of Krishna, the Braja Gopis, Gopika Kanta. But of all those Kantas, there's one special Kanta, that is Radha. There are thousands, there's Chandravali, Lita Vishaka, Indulekha, Tungavidya, Sudevi, Rangadevi, Champak Chitra, Lita Vishaka. There's so many Shaivya Padma. So many Sakis and Gopis competing for Krishna's hand, and competing to please Krishna. But of all those gopi kantas, there's one kanta that's supreme, and that's Radha Kanta. So that's why they save the best for last. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dinabandho, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate. So the topmost devotees at the end of the list, yeah, the gopa kantas and the gopeshas, he's controller of the gopas, the coward boys and gals, and he's a jagat, he's a lord of the universe, all these different points. But when it's all said and done, the final point is that Krishna is Radha Kanta. He is a lover of Radha, and Radha is the supreme Kanta of Krishna, has the topmost Kanta Prem, Ujjala Prem for Krishna. And because her love is topmost, then Krishna has to show the topmost form. And that topmost form is called Purnatam. And Purnatam Bhagavan, we say Purna Bhagavan. Swayam Bhagavan, Purna Bhagavan. But Purna Bhagavan, this is in Dwarka. And Purnatara Bhagavan is in Mathura. And Purnatam Bhagavan, he alone is in Vrindavan. This is Sri Krishna Vrindavan, surrounded by the Brijvasis, Nanda Bhavi Yashoda, Sridham Subal, Raktak Patrak, and especially Radharani. And there are gopis. She's the topmost. Kanta Prem, Kanta Bhav. So this is the describing here that This Krishna point is being said that Krishna manifests within the heart as we increase our attachment and affection for Krishna. He repeatedly, by repeatedly reading and meditating upon him, will become full of attachment and attraction. And Krishna will manifest more and more within our minds. So this is the whole idea of these verses. The more we study these verses, the more we read these verses from Bhajan Rahasyam, chapter 6, Shashtiyam Sadhana, the more some sprinkling of bhav will come in our mind. We'll become more attracted to Krishna, more attached to Krishna. These verses have this magical effect. There's some magic in these verses. Because these verses are all about Krishna. They're all about Krishna's love. And they're all about Krishna's devotees. So next verse, this is text 20, describing this principle again of Bhagavat Prati Abhilash, which is a symptom of bhava, developing intense desire to attain Krishna. So we're hearing about how intense the gopis, how much intensity they have for Krishna. So this is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.14. This is Krishna's darshan at the level of anurag, which is a high level of prema. The result of having darshan of the deity with deep loving attachment, anurag. Yasya anuraga aplutaha sarasa nilavaloka pratilabdhamanaha prajastriyo drigibir anapravitta diyo vatastu kila krittisheshaha. When the young women of Braj were honored by Krishna's affectionate laughter, joking words, and playful glances, their eyes would become fixed on him. Their minds would become so absorbed in Krishna that they would become unaware of their bodies and homes, and they would remain standing as if lifeless, like dolls. So, Krishna, he would simply interact, when Krishna was in Braj, if he interacted in a very slight way with the Braja gopis, a few affectionate words, some playful glances, some laughter, and the gopis would see this even from some distance. Maybe he's just passing on the road and he mentions a few affectionate words and looks at them. There's no real intimate meeting, no private confidential meeting, just meeting on the street as he's passing by with the cows, and they're on the side. He may say a few words to them, but when the gopis are just looking at him without moving their eyes. And later when they remember it, their minds become so absorbed that they forget about their bodies and homes, and they become stunned. And they just stand there like figures drawn in a painting or just like statues. Anuraga hasa rasa lilava lokane sambuchita vrajagopi nityadarshane Savakriti Samadana Antare Maniya Krishna Rupa Mugda Netri Rahai Dandaya. Sri Krishna, who is controlled by prema, casts sidelong glances at the gopis as he laughs playfully. At that time, prema increases in the gopis' hearts, and their desire to enhance Krishna's pleasure awakens. The gopis make Krishna eager to meet him by their variety, by their different types of laughing, joking, and sulkiness. In response to their love for him, Krishna runs with an eager heart to pacify the gopis' man. Controlled by the gopis' deeply affectionate prema, Krishna announces his gratitude by accepting eternal indebtedness to them. Of course, that's in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, in the Pariyeham. Krishna tells the gopis, "You've satisfied me so much. You love me and serve me so much, I can never serve you the same way or never love you with the same degree of intensity. So I don't know what to do. I'm a beggar. I'm a debtor. I become indebted to you. I can't even the score. I can't pay you back. You'll just have to be satisfied. You have to be satisfied with whatever happiness you've derived by serving me. The only payment I can give back to you, the only payment I can give return to you is the happiness that you must be feeling by serving me. Because otherwise, I within my storehouse, I don't have anything in my command or within my hand that I can offer back to you to repay you for the great service you've rendered to me. You just have to be happy with the service itself, because I can't serve you to the same limit, the same depth or extent. So he says that verse, Napar Yeham, I can never pay back my debt to you. I'm an eternal debtor. Unlimited waves enter the ocean of Bhav, and the Braja Ramanis, or Gopis of Braj, who are endowed with Mahabhav. And while attending to their household duties, such as cleaning the house, smearing cow dung on the floor, and churning yogurt, the gopis are always absorbed in remembering Sri Krishna's different pastimes. Of course, this is the ideal behavior illustrated by the gopis' personal lives in Braj. They did their domestic duties, cooking, cleaning, sweeping, brooming, and cleansing the floor with, they didn't use pine saw or phenol or something, eucalyptus oil, but they used, smeared the floors with fresh layer of cow dung. And they were doing all these activities, but their minds, they were absorbed in remembering Krishna's different leelas, leela smaranam. Of course, this is very, not easy, but they were, this is their natural bhav, sahaja bhav, their natural state. But they're showing the ideal. We are not on a level of ideal level, but we should strive to become ideal. This is the whole idea. We hear how they're acting, and then we want to act in a similar way. Engage in our activities, but remember Krishna's pastimes at the same time. The Braja Ramanis, gopis' hearts and senses become Krishna's dedicated followers, and the gopis' minds become imprisoned within Krishna's heart. Seeing their activities, Krishna himself becomes astonished. What to speak of others? So Krishna himself is astonished. How much you're absorbed in me. You're going mad. You're thinking of me. You're identifying yourselves with me. You start imitating my pastimes. One gopi says, I'm Krishna. Hey, Kaliya, you got off. Hey, Kaliya, you wicked serpent, you got out from here. I have appeared just to vanquish demonic entities like you. Now leave this Yamuna and stop polluting it and killing all my friends and harassing everyone. So one gopi enters into this bhava of Kaliya Daman and starts kicking another gopi and says, hey, get out from here. So much they become identified with Krishna's pastimes. So this astonishes. Krishna becomes astonished when he sees this because he's hiding right behind the bushes watching the gopis enact this pastime of madness on the banks of the Yamuna during the Rasa dance. So in the verse it said that the gopis turned to statues. Krishna smiles a little bit or speaks some few sweet words or glances at them. Then they become paralyzed. The gopis become paralyzed. They just freeze like statues. They can't move an inch. So how does this happen? Sri Krishna is extremely attached to the gopis in many different ways. Krishna sometimes prays to the gopis. He spends so much time trying to appease and comfort their man and break their man or the sulky, pouting mood. Sometimes Krishna waits at the gate, begging for permission from one of the sakis so that he can enter the kunj and meet Radharani. Can you imagine? Husband comes into his house and he wants to go in the bedroom to be with his wife, and there's some guard standing at the door. Hey, wait, where are you going? You can't go in here. The husband says, what are you talking about? This is my house, this is my bedroom, my wife is there, I'm sleeping there. No, you can't go, stop. We prohibit you from going. And besides, your wife doesn't want to see you. What do you mean she doesn't want to see me? Why didn't she want to see you? No, she didn't give any reason. It's called a hoitaki man. If you want to be technical, it's called a hoitaki man without a cause. There's no cause. She's just sulking for no cause. She's pouting. She doesn't want to see you. Now, Jal, get out. Hey, who are you? Who are you to stop me? I'll call the police. No, there's no police here. It doesn't work over here. We'll throw you out. And you get out, and they start throwing you out. And you have to go out. You can't do anything. So Krishna has to beg these guards. He has to beg the sakis at the entrance of the kunj. Oh, saki, oh, Lita, Vishaka, please. How many sweets do you want? How can I bribe you? How many kisses do you want? How many embraces do you want? Set your figure, set your wager, and I'll set your bribe, and I'll give it to you. Whatever it takes, but please. So these are what happens. The Krishna has to wait at the gate of the Kunj, which means his private pleasure room, for permission to enter. At that time, the gopis feel very content and successful, and then they drink the splendor of Krishna's beauty, and thus they become motionless like statues. So this whole experience for the gopis, when they stop Krishna, then they relish the movements of his eyes, the fear in his eyes, the shyness in his face, and the fear in Krishna's eyes, and his frustration that comes over his face when he's denied entrance into the Kunj. And they relish some very great feelings of ecstatic bliss in their hearts, seeing all these emotions in Krishna's face and form, and how he walks away so slowly and dejectedly. Then all this together stimulates the hearts of the gopis' love. The love in the heart of the gopis to such an extent that they become stunned. And they become motionless like statues. These are all very high pastimes. And this is where the Bhajan Rahasyam is leading us to. These secrets of devotion, secrets of Bhajan Rahasyam. They're elevating us higher and higher. Because at this level of bhava, one, of course, in the beginning, he has a very great desire, Bhagavat Prapti Avilash, he has great desire to attain this particular form of Bhagavan in a particular dham. So here it's already given, it's already prescribed. There's no room for any speculation at this level. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, this is the form of Bhagavan we're talking about here in bhava. And Gaudiya Vaishnava is at the level above. It's Radha and Krishna, and Krishna and Nikunj, and Radha and Nikunj, and their intimate seva. And this is the beauty of Krishna at this time. And this is the beauty of the gopis at this time. And hearing about this beauty, and their exchanges, and their sweetness of their feelings, and the desires of their hearts to serve and please each other, will increase the desire for Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, which will increase the desire, the taste, create some taste within us, taste of aspiration. The first type of taste is the desire to taste, aspiring for that taste, aspiring to taste that taste. And that will come even to the level of Anartha Nivritti or Nishtha. Then there's the actual understanding of the taste and attraction to the taste. And that's at the level of Nishtha and Ruchi. And Ruchi, there's Ruchi Abbas. There's some, you can say, glimmer or glimpse of that taste being experienced at Ruchi. But then at this level above, then there's some full taste is coming, very strong taste. So one very much appreciates the form of the Lord. Now this is the last verse where he's describing this principle of Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, 21st verse, text 18 through 21 of the Shastiyam Sadhana, are describing this Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, which is one of the symptoms of Bhava Bhakti. Well, this is let's just check how many verses in the sixth yam. It's all about the same. There are 27 verses here in this chapter, in this sixth level of bhajan, Shastiyam Sadhana. So out of those 26 verses, four of them, about one-sixth of the verses are about this one principle of bhava, Bhagavat Prapti Avilash. This is text 21. Aishwarya, Krishna's Aishwarya, form of sweetness. So this verse is called the Supremacy of the Sweet Lord. This is a verse from 3rd Canto Bhagavatam, chapter 2, verse 21. So this is the beauty of Krishna and Vrindavan. Krishna is the supreme. In Vrindavan you have the supreme combination of Madhurya and Aishwarya. There's no greater, sweeter, no more sweeter aspect of Krishna or Bhagavan than in Vrindavan. And there's no greater Aishwarya aspect of God than in Vrindavan. And generally in Vaikuntha and other realms, we have Aishwarya is so much overplayed and over displayed, and not very much Madhurya. But this is Madhurya Dham. Vrindavan, there's topmost Madhurya, and the Leelas, the intimacy, the Nara Leela, the human-like Leelas, the equality, or even the friends feeling superior to God, or more than God. So this is very special. So although Krishna is the sweetest manifestation of God, He is still the Supreme Lord of all gods. This is 3.2.21. Sayam tu samya tisayastriyadisha saraji lakshmiapta samastakamaha palim haradbish chirlokapale kirita koti ditaparapita. Sri Krishna is Himself the Supreme Lord of the three potencies, Ladini, Samvit, and Sandini. No one is equal to Krishna, so who can be greater than Him? All Krishna's desires are fulfilled by His own transcendental goddess of fortune, Rajya Lakshmi. Indra and innumerable other Lokapalas, presiding over different regions of the universe, bring varieties of offerings to Krishna and pay their obeisances, touching the tops of their crowns to the footstool on which He rests His lotus feet. So this verse is indicating something of the opulence of Krishna. And so this is very opulent, that all the greatest rulers, all the planetary rulers, of all the different millions of demigods are so wealthy and influential and powerful, they come and they roll at the dust of Krishna's feet. Of course, this form of Krishna being identified here may be Dwarka Krishna being indicated here, because this particular pastime has also happened there in Dwarka. Once Brahma came there, and he came, and you know the pastime, he was rather proud. He said, the four-headed Brahma is here. And Krishna made him wait. And while Brahma was waiting, because he thought he was the only Brahma, Krishna called all thousands and millions of Brahmas. And then Brahma went inside, the four-headed Brahma, and he was astounded seeing all the Brahmas with 10 heads, 1,000 heads, lack of heads. But Acharya's comments say not only Brahma was there, but all the demigods were there. There were thousands of Shivas. There were Shivas with 1 head, 5 heads, 50 heads, 100 heads. There were so many Shivas there, so many Indras there. All the Devas, all the Digpals, all the Devas were there in Dwarka, offering homage and praise to the Lord. So that's a fantastic display of opulence, Maryada or Aishwarya, of opulence. So okay, that's Dwarka, but we're talking about Vrindavan. In Vrindavan we have the greatest manifestation of opulence and the greatest manifestation of sweetness. So what happens over here? Oh, what happens over here? We have a great sweetness. Krishna's walking, no crown on His head, just a piece of cloth. What kind of cloth? Any cloth. On top of the cloth, there's some mango blossoms from a mango tree on top of His turban, pagri. There's some dirty old feather from peacock. And there's some dust, goduli, sprinkled on His turban. It's all, technically, His turban is full of dirt, goduli. And then he's just walking barefoot. He doesn't have any slippers or shoes. And he has a little bamboo flute in his hand, and he's playing a bamboo flute. And a lagudi tucked under his arm, a cowherding stick. Very sweet, natural, ordinary, human-like form. He's just a little coward boy. There's millions of coward boys in Vrindavan bringing cows back into the pastures. Bringing cows back to the village. So there's nothing grand about that form of Krishna. There's nothing glorious, grand, or majestic. There's no majesty in that form. Little Dodi doesn't even have a shirt. He looks to be very poor. He can't even afford to buy a button-down shirt. But you see that Narayan and Vaikuntha and Vishnu, they have gold jackets and so many button-down shirts and very opulent clothes. So this form, this Nara Leela, this Nara Rupam, the human-like form of Krishna tending the cows, Govinda Gopal, seems very innocent, very saral, this Bolanath, very natural, childlike, human-like, not the least bit of majesty or royalty or opulence there, just simple dhoti, some Gunja Mala, Vajjanti Mala going down to his ankles. But that's on one side, that's the Madhurya Rupam. Rupa Madhurya of Krishna, the sweetness. But then where's the majesty? Where's the omnipotence? Where's the Aishwarya, the Maryada? Where's the Aishwarya Bhagavan? Aishwarya Mahi Bhagavan. This is Madhurya Mahi Bhagavan. Where's Aishwarya Mahi Bhagavan? That same boy, while he's walking back to Nandagram, and Uttara goes to Leela, he gets outside of Nandagram, then all the devas come and fall at his feet, just like Dwarkadish. They all offer their heads at his feet, and they all do elaborate puja, and they bring so many fruits and so many wonderful sweets and fruits from the heavenly planets and higher regions, from Devalok. They do elaborate puja to Krishna, big chamaras and big ghee lamps and all kinds of opulence. The devis and the devas, a very opulent and grand worship. So now on that side we have all this opulence, unlimited opulence of Krishna. So this is what the Acharyas are saying, that the goddess of fortune, that all the great leaders of the universe, they offer their crowns at the tips of his lotus feet. So this is the Samadhika Shunya Krishna Tri Shakti Ishvar Sarupa Ishvarya Purna Kama Nirantar Sopayana Lokapala Kirita Nishchai Lagna Pada Pita Stava Niyatishai. So this is a Bengali rendition of the verse. So we can start tomorrow reading this purport, which is this is the last verse describing the Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash of the Lord. How much this Krishna is so grand, so sweet, so attractive, so beautiful, from all different levels, from all different viewpoints, from the devas' viewpoint, from the gopis' viewpoint, and hopefully someday from our viewpoint, by hearing about this attraction. And this, we go through this book. Generally, the system he's telling is that whatever level we're on, we stay in that chapter and study those verses over and over again from all angles of vision and chant the holy name and study that particular shloka from the Shikshastakam until we realize that level is deeply realized, until that our bhajan at that level brings us to the next level, and then we stay on that level. We're reading the whole book, trying to get some overview. But for practical application, we may stay in one particular chapter for some time. So now we're on the chapter of Bhav, which when we come there, that's up to Krishna and the eternal associates of the Lord, how they want to bestow their grace upon us. So now we're reading, getting some understanding, and we can, of course, read the whole book, but when it's, as far as the guideline or handbook to bhajan, steady bhajan, we will chant the holy name, a particular pair of holy names that applies to where we are. We'll pray to that pair of holy names, we'll study these verses, and we'll remain on that level until that bhajan brings us to the next level. That type of bhajan will carry us up to the next level. These are the steps. It's called bhajan, bhajan krama, the sequence or the steps of bhajan. So in this particular book of perfection, there are eight steps. And these are the analogous to the eight leelas of the Lord. So at this level, on the sixth level, at bhava, at the bhava level, one's bhajan is such that he actually begins to perceive the leelas. The astakali leela begins to perceive at this level. And short intervals of meditation, the leelas come naturally in his mind at the time of chanting japa, generally. So we'll stop there.